Hey, the start of something special right here, man. Let's go.
Number one fantasy player right here.
Got past the line. Shut up. Know the rules.
I just want to say this to you. Right now, best in the game.
I know.
Hello and welcome in to the Pod After Touchdown Fantasy Football Podcast. I am your host, Sam Hoppin, joined as always by my co-host, Andrew Mackins, and our producer, Garner. Fellas, how are you doing tonight?
I'm good, man. It's week two of Hard Knocks, so we're getting that much closer to real football. I'm excited to watch that and see some players in pads, you know, lighting up the Twitterverse with their camp highlights and throwing all of our perception of these players out of whack.
Speaking of Hard Knocks and what we would like to see on it, I would like to not see any more nose swabs and blood draws. I think there were like 30 too many of those. One probably would have been enough. But Garner, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing great. I am loving, like Megan said, football being back now and browsing Twitter and seeing endless clips of passes and also the overreactions of, I saw one today of Josh Allen like throwing a pass deep and the person's like, he's the best quarterback in the AFC here. Clearly, he completed a pass to nobody on the practice field. Best player in the league right now.
Hype trains are leaving the station left and right. Choo-choo!
They sure are. It is great to have some actual football to be talking about. It's great to have live sports back in general. We talked about that last week, but it's just nice to turn the TV on and just get a little professional sports and digest that. Even throughout the day, I was watching basketball this afternoon instead of maybe doing some work that I should have been doing. But in any case, today we are bringing one of our most popular segments back from last offseason, and that's making some boring players sexy. So we're going to talk about a couple players that we haven't talked about as often this offseason and give them a little bit of lipstick and make them a little bit more draftable for our fantasy football audience. But before we do that, we'll do our kickoff question and mental health minute. So without further ado, let's kick things off.
And this game is underway.
So for our kickoff question today, it's basically who is this year's Brandon Cooks? So it's a consistently good wide receiver that is being drafted in sort of the early to mid rounds of drafts that could likely fall off a cliff. So Garner, I'll let you start with this one.
All right. I'm excited because I believe this fits perfectly for what you're looking for. In the past 5 years in PPR, he has finished 12th, 18th, 5th, 13th, and 9th. He averages 143 targets per year, 1,086 yards per year during that span. He is currently in PPR, going 68th overall, wide receiver 29, and he hasn't missed a single game since he's been in the league. Who is it, Sam?
I have a guess on who it is. It is Mr. Jarvis Landry.
Yes, it is. Landry. Yes, it is. I mean, those are almost all wide receiver one or like fringe wide receiver one finishes the past 5 years in 143 targets on average over that time, switching teams and coming into the new system a couple of years ago, still does good, puts PPR wide receiver 18, and he's going as wide receiver 29 right now.
He's a guy who really everyone says every year, and I've heard it this year too, is that he's always underdrafted because people keep doubting him, and then he always beats his ADP. But I could totally see with him coming off of the, I believe it was hip surgery, that he does not get, you know, back to the level of production he saw in previous years.
I totally agree. I really like this as a pick. I think it's been encouraging to see him back on the field in these training camp hype videos, as we've talked about, and I believe he's been activated off the PUP, so that's encouraging, but he just does not offer, in my opinion, the ceiling that some of those other players do on a season-long basis. Andrew, who is your Brandon Cooks of this year.
Yeah, for sure. So a guy that comes to mind immediately when I think of potential to fall off a cliff, especially given the capital we've drafted him at before, is a guy that Garner actually tends to like, and that's Keenan Allen. So Keenan Allen has always been a consistent receptions and yardage guy year in and year out. He's shown that he's not really injury prone. He just had some bad years early in his career with injury. But now you've got Phillip Rivers leaving, and Phillip Rivers always just, you know, fed Keenan Allen the ball. And so with a kind of murky quarterback situation, we don't know what the volume for passing is going to look like. Tyrod's going to run it more. I think he's going to dump it off to Austin Eckler more. You've got other talented guys in that offense to kind of spread the ball around to. So that's a guy that I think is a, you know, a popular candidate to fall off a cliff, as you say.
I would also agree with that one, which it's going to make the guy that I chose be a little bit bold. And that person is Tyler Lockett, who has finished as a top 15 wide receiver the past two seasons. Not quite as long of a track record as Allen or Landry, but he's shown he can be near elite. And I just think last season was a bit of a tale of two halves, and the second half was just not that good for him. He scored two of his eight touchdowns in the last seven games. He had more than 55 receiving yards in just one of those games and never reached double-digit targets after eclipsing that mark in three games in the first 9 weeks. So he's always been sort of one of the most efficient receivers, and I've never been one to bank on efficiency because that is something that we often see regress. Now, the volume may continue to rise or stay the same, but not enough to the point that I think it'll offset. So it came out the other day that he had seriously considered opting out because of some stuff he has going on at home. So you never know if something comes up week one or two, if he ends up bowing out and, you know, opting out for the rest of the season. So not that that's necessarily a reason why he'll drop off, but just something to be cautious of.
So those are fair for both of them, but I guess I was a little curious about it. I thought this was word is just, again, like who's, I didn't think we were looking at someone who's falling off. I thought this was just worded. Well, we have it worded as a consistently good wide receiver who's being drafted early to mid.
No, I know.
And you guys are both talking about him being like, okay, but he's going to fall off. This guy's going to fall off. And I'm like, well, what? It sounds like from how this was worded here, we don't want him to drop off, right? We want someone who's drafting low but going to perform high.
So, Garner, before we go forward, and we can cut this part if you want, I don't care, but let's let it fly here.
Yeah.
Were you going into this thinking it's a player that would fall off, or did you just think of a guy who's always been consistent and you think he's going to continue to be consistent in Jarvis Landry?
Yeah, more that second one where, again, it's someone that you are getting more or less like value for, who's kind of being underrated, where it's again early to mid round, but they are performing for that early round.
Okay, because I
there's no mention in the show notes of
I kind of want to,
you guys came in here and both are on a completely different page than me. I got different show notes.
This is some early episode drama for our listeners here, because I actually had Tyler Boyd written down. If we want to talk about Tyler Boyd too, we can. But once you said fall off a cliff, I'm like, well, now I got to change this. I picked Keenan Allen on the spot. But Tyler Boyd is like a mid-round guy with back-to-back 1,000-yard receiving seasons. And I think he's a good, you know, high-floor option too. Falling off a cliff, I mean, I'm the high guy on Tyler Lockett, the other Tyler in this conversation. I hope that all these guys continue to do great. But some people are just going to have to see a downturn in production.
Yeah, I guess that was a miss on my part, because I guess it was sort of assumed that we were talking about Brandon Cooks in the sense that he was a consistently good wide receiver, and then last year he fell off a cliff. So that is my mistake for the miscommunication.
Okay, now we're keeping all of this in here
in the future. Oh yeah, now we are. Okay, let's move on to our mental health minute, and for today we're going to talk a little bit about the little voice in your head. Everyone's got that little voice that is kind of annoying, that tells you you're not doing the right thing and is telling you you're being unproductive, stuff like that. So what do each of you do to sort of shut that voice up and get it out of your head? Andrew, I'll pass it to you first.
Yeah, I appreciate you bringing this one up, because I think that I'm really hard on myself in that regard, because you look at, you know, you're getting distracted throughout the day, and then you hear that voice in your head saying, like, you haven't done shit today. And then you start to feel bad about what you've done. But I think spinning it to the end of the day to be like positive and, you know, have like, you know, a checklist of things that you need to do throughout the day, and then being able to mark off the things you did accomplish, like focusing on the positive is super important in this regard. If I'm trying to, you know, focus up in the middle of the day, make sure I don't let the whole day get away from me. You know, sometimes looking up like inspirational videos on YouTube or pump up music can help you get in the zone. And, you know, I've heard as well, just for people who get easily distracted, like, I feel like I have some level of ADHD sometimes, or ADD, like can't focus. I've heard a good tip of just starting to try working on something for like 3 to 5 minutes. And if you're, you know, you could become focused. And if you're, you know, not listening to music like me, or like you might be getting focused on something and working on something, and you realize like a half hour later, like, oh, I wasn't even listening to music because I was just focused on this thing I was working on. So really getting in a zone that way. But it, you know, if you're still distracted after 5 minutes, that's okay. Move on to something else and come back to it. And I think being, you know, kind of real with yourself in that regard, that you're, you know, sometimes you're going to get distracted, but there are ways to focus up and still stay positive on what you can't have accomplished is super helpful. Sorry if I stole
right.
all
Those
your
are all good
yeah,
points.
If I stole all your points, I apologize.
It's all good. Gunnar, anything to add there?
I guess, I mean, a little bit, it's pretty much what he said, but I just, a lot of times I'll take like a second, I'll just pause whatever I'm doing. Again, whether it's something fun, frustrating, like video games, or it's work, I'll just take a step back and then just breathe and just call, like, kind of center myself. And then also, like Mackin said, is I'll do like little chores around the house or the apartment here, where, again, like the most minuscule thing of like, I'm just going to put a few dishes away or whatever, or like just literally move them from the sink to the dishwasher, rinse them off, put them in there. Just little things like that, that, again, that feeling of kind of success or accomplishment, whether they're a big thing or small, just helps me feel positive.
Yeah, that's why that's why Field Yates makes his bed every morning, even if it's in a hotel, because a bed made is a task accomplished. And it's something that, you know, I think that a lot of military people follow that mantra, because it gets your day started off really well, because you actually, you know, accomplish something right from when you wake up.
Right. The last thing I'll add is just talking to someone else about it. You know, I am fortunate enough to have a great sounding board in my girlfriend. So if I've got some other little voice in my head creeping in, I'll just be like, hey, like, I feel like I haven't gotten anything done today. Like, I'm not my best self right now. She's usually pretty good about calming myself down and making sure I get back on track and am not feeling down about myself. So I appreciate you guys sharing. Again, we have a lot of the same feelings about that, and hope all of you can use some of those to distract yourself and get that little voice out of your head, except the three little voices you've got going into your head.
Hey. Good one. We're on your shoulder, only with fantasy advice. Let's make some boring players sexy.
You got it, Andrew. Let's get into making some boring players sexy. So for this exercise, I gave Andrew 4 players that he has to make sexy, and he gave me 4 players that I have to make sexy. We did 1 at each position. So Andrew, I'm going to let you start with trying to make Ben Roethlisberger, the quarterback for the Pittsburgh Steelers, sexy again. I know he's trimmed down and, you know, got
I was
a little
just thinking
more
that.
Physique, but from a fantasy football perspective, how can he be sexy this year?
Slightly less of a double chin. Hope he keeps the beard going. But yeah, Ben Roethlisberger, he's a guy who, like I've said a few times now, is in the same tier as the guy that I talked about as a my guy last week, Daniel Jones, and your my guy, Jared Goff. And I think that if it's for a lot of the same reasons, yeah, he's the oldest of the bunch, but he's just coming back from injury. In 2018, he was the QB3 on the season and in points per game because he actually played 16 games in 2018. So that 600 pass attempt potential is there. Even if they start running more and he doesn't throw as often for the defense, because of the defense or something like that, I still think that Roethlisberger has the weapons around him to drive greater efficiency. You know, Juju saw 166 targets and 1,400 yards in 2018. Deontay Johnson was really impressive as a rookie when he had Duck Hodges and Mason Rudolph as his quarterback. James Washington's a deep threat. He's not going to be a great fantasy option for you, but he'll help Roethlisberger's numbers, I think. And then you've got a combo of Eric Ebron and Chase Claypool as these big targets in the red zone for, to help Roethlisberger with his, you know, pass touchdown efficiency. James Conner's been solid in the passing game as well, but you just look at his ADP for Roethlisberger, and it's QB19 on Fantasy Pros, so he's basically a last-round pick in my mind if you punt at QB. I think he's just as good as an option, or just as good of an option as any of those other guys, and even his schedule to start, I think, is great. It's at the Giants, home to the Broncos, and then home to the Texans, so some pretty exploitable matchups there to get your fantasy team off to a good start.
Not a bad argument. Roethlisberger is just one of those guys where, again, we talk about some of the other players in the tier and range that he's going in, and they're just other guys that I think have a safer floor and as much upside as him. And the last time we saw him for a full season, the Steelers, I believe, passed for had the most passing attempts in the NFL. And with as good as that defense is, I wonder if they'll be throwing that much. Yeah. Granted, you know, they lost Antonio Brown too, which, again, like, will probably have a big impact on Ben Roethlisberger. We only saw him for two games last year. So a pretty good argument. I think it's, again, just whether you're balancing upside or the floor. So
yeah, the upside is there, which is what makes him sexy. Sorry.
That's all good. It's my turn now to talk about a quarterback who also lost a big weapon in Stephon Diggs, and that quarterback is obviously Kirk Cousins. So here we go, trying to make the guy who puts tinfoil around his steak when he grills it sexy, which is a big knock against him. But all that aside, he finished as the quarterback 18 last year on a team that passed the ball on just over 50% of its plays. So we talk about the opposite of what the Steelers did in Roethlisberger's last healthy season. I think they're bound to throw the ball a lot more with a worse defense in 2020. Per PFF, he had the second most completions on passes 20 plus yards down the field since 2016, which is pretty dang good. And he had the highest completion rate on throws less than 20 yards down the field at 82% last year. So he's a huge threat on play action, and they're usually one of the highest users of play action passes in the NFL. Like I said, it doesn't help that he lost Stephon Diggs, but he'll hopefully have Thielen for a full 16 games. Justin Jefferson joins the offense. Irv Smith is in his second year in the offense. Dalvin Cook is obviously no slouch as a threat out of the backfield. Garner would kill me if I didn't mention the uber-talented Kyle Rudolph in that offense. And Andrew, I know you put a lot of stock into PFF grades, and Cousins was the sixth highest graded quarterback in the NFL last year with an 84.2 grade from there. So it's, he's good when he's actually throwing the ball. It's just a matter of volume for him. And I think with the defense regressing, they lost a lot of pieces in the secondary. I think that whether they want to throw the ball more, it's not necessarily going to be up to them. I think they're going to be chasing points in a number of games, and he'll be forced to throw the ball. So I don't think he's got as much upside as Roethlisberger does, but he's one of those later quarterbacks that has a decent floor that will get you probably between 14 and 15 points per game at least a week, and has the opportunity to have those boom games every once in a while if he's playing in a shootout.
Yeah, I've always liked Cousins' talent, and so if I saw him succeeding early on in the year and throwing, you know, 25 passes a game or something, I'd be willing to take a shot on him for a streaming option. It's definitely tough to just project he'll go, you know, have such a big increase in passes that he'll end up being a QB1 or like a, you know, a top 12 guy, but I don't mind the, you know, the PFF grade. That always helps.
Oh yeah, I know you love that stuff. I'm going to keep it rolling here and talk about a running back that you think is no longer sexy. We're sort of keeping it in this Steelers family, but an ex-Steeler in this instance, and that's Le'Veon Bell trying to make him sexy again. These are players that we just haven't talked a lot about this offseason, don't get a ton of buzz. They're sort of being seen as avoids by many people in the fantasy industry. And for obvious reason, it wasn't pretty for Bell last year, but I think there is optimism for him in heading into 2020. A friend of the pod, JJ Zacharyson, wrote earlier this offseason how the Jets as a team are bound for some positive scoring regression. They scored just 25 offensive touchdowns last year, which is something done by just 19 other teams between 2011 and 2018. So it just a historically bad year scoring the ball. Bell only had 3 touchdowns himself. So if he maintains his workload, he'll most certainly score more than that. And speaking of workload, he had 311 touches in 15 games last year. So he was both 7th in targets and receptions at the running back position, which is the type of upside we're looking for out of a running back. I believe he's going around the 4th round in drafts right now. So if you load up on a couple wide receivers and maybe a tight end early and get him as your running back 1, he's not going to be the Le'Veon Bell of Steelers past, but he certainly has the upside with the amount of volume he's getting on a week-to-week basis.
The thing I like that you bring up the most is the 300 touches, because a lot of times opportunity wins, even if it's just a war of attrition for Bell. The one thing that, you know, makes him not sexy in my mind is we've talked about Adam Gase being just a bad coach a lot of times on this podcast. And so I'm wondering how much positive regression.
There's a reason I didn't
bring that up. I'm curious to see like how much positive regression you get. Maybe the offense is just bad, and so it'll still be tough for him. But, you know, 300 touches is a good threshold for a starting running back on your fantasy squad. So I think that's a good point. And I think that's a, you know, a good point that also goes in favor of my running back that I'm trying to make sexy here, and it's Chris Carson. And the first thing I'll say about him is that the opportunity for Carson is really fixed in this Seattle offense. We've talked before about how we would love to see Russ Cook in the passing game for Seattle, but Pete Carroll, I think, is more likely to, you know, keep that attack balanced and still be run first. Maybe less run first than they have been in the past. But, you know, in 2018, Carson saw 250 plus touches. He had 300 plus in 2019. So I think those are good benchmarks for an RB1. You know, right now, Rashad Penny is on the pup, and that's the guy we were worried about taking Carson's job last season. So I don't see him with his, you know, current injury taking anything away from Carson early on in the season. I don't see Hyde taking his job either. I think he's more of a spellback for him. And the biggest thing for me with Carson, and you could say the same thing about Lev Bell, is these are some of the last guys in the running back position before a huge drop off in opportunity. So if you want a RB1 and an RB2 on your squad, but you haven't picked up that second guy yet, I think Carson is a must draft in that 4th round area. If you really value having those legit starting running backs with legit opportunity.
I think you bring up a good point there. These guys are at a point in your draft where the reason that they're boring is because we've ostensibly found or seen their ceiling before. We've already seen sort of what they can do at their peak, and I think people are discounting them because there's the Jonathan Taylor, there's Clyde Edwards-Helaire, players like that who we haven't seen the ceiling for. So if you're getting them in the same round, then you know maybe you can realize that ceiling on your team. But these are guys who, like you said, are seeing a consistent workload and are going to put up decent weeks for you every week and might not necessarily win you a week, but will keep you in contention every time. So let's move on to the pass catchers. The first couple ones were a little easier to make the case for. I think it gets a little bit more difficult for both of us here. I know you sent the puking emoji to me when I sent you this guy to make sexy, and that's Julian Edelman. Granted, he's physically speaking a very attractive man, but from, again, fantasy football perspective, this year might not have the best pedigree going into the season. What say you?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I should have outsourced this one to Garner because I know that he loves Julian Edelman this year, but I took it on as good as I could. You know, I think that Edelman gets a huge upgrade from when we were talking maybe even just a month ago, because within the past month, Cam Newton got signed to the team, and Cam Newton has upside of being an MVP level quarterback. And so he can make Kelvin Benjamin a good wide receiver in fantasy. You know, even looking at Julian Edelman just last year, he did get a ton of volume, 100 receptions on 153 targets. And I think slot receiver is, you know, the way that Edelman profiles, that's actually good for Cam and his, you know, tendency to be more of a short area target passer. Obviously, you're going to have James White coming out of the backfield. But other than that, like, there's not a ton of direct competition on the Patriots other than N'Keal Harry. You know, and when it comes to ADP, Edelman's drafted as a wide receiver 3. Like, he's wide receiver 33 in Fantasy Pros. So if you like those high floor players, you've already loaded up at, you know, maybe high upside quarterback. You've got both your running backs, both your starting wide receivers, and Edelman's still there. I think he is a solid floor in your flex position if that's the route that you want to take.
It sounds like that's not the route that you want to take. You're talking about all these other people.
Yeah, I mean, I've had this argument with
the upside at the flex.
Yeah, I've had this argument with other people about like whether to take a high floor guy to fill that spot or someone who's got higher upside, and we can save that for, you know, a draft prep pod or something like that. But it's very easy to see him get 5 catches for 60 yards every week if that's all you're looking for.
Yeah, that's a good point. To your earlier point too, a lot of his value depends on which Cam Newton we get. Do we get the one we saw before he injured himself, or do we get the one that we saw at the peak of his career when he was a top 5 quarterback, not only in fantasy, but in football in general? So this next guy is someone who I actually didn't find that difficult to make a case for, and that's Sterling Shepard. He played really well in the 10 games that he started last season. And not only did Shepard see a large target share, which was 23% in the games that he played, but he converted his targets into a solid 5.7 receptions per game, which landed him among the top 12 wide receivers in that category last year. If he can manage to stay healthy throughout the season, this pick will become extremely valuable for your teams. Not to mention, he is catching passes from your guy, Daniel Jones. He's got continuity in that regard. So as good as you think Daniel Jones is, there is that bit of chemistry that they hopefully have together. So I like Sterling Shepard later in drafts and think he can, again, if he's a cheaper version of Julian Edelman, in my opinion. And I think he's got more week winning upside, despite what we think about Darius Slayton. So I really like Sterling Shepard this year, and was actually surprised when you prompted me with him for this segment.
Well, Sam, I gave him to you because I tried to gaslight you into being a Sterling Shepard truther on one of our previous episodes, and you kind of responded sarcastically, so I was like, oh, maybe he doesn't like him, but let's figure this out.
I wouldn't say I'm a truther, but I don't hate him either. Like, if someone wants to draft him, like, by all means do it, and I'm not going to fault you if you're not drafting him either. So I'm sort of speaking out of two sides of my mouth here, but he's one of those guys where it makes sense because of where he's being drafted, but he is what he is. So we sort of know what he is. And I think a lot of it, again, depends on whether he can stay healthy. And
yeah,
speaking of guys staying healthy, the tight end that I've got to make sexy is Hunter Henry, which Henry is not going to be on any of my teams because he's in that middle tier of tight ends that is getting drafted in the 6th, 7th round that I want no part of. So here goes nothing. Henry has been as steady as they come while he's been on the field, though, and that means a lot, especially at the tight end position. So when he's been healthy, he's averaged 3.3 receptions on 4.7 targets for about 42 yards and about a half touchdown per game over the course of his career, which if you project out to a 16-game season is 52 catches, 667 yards, and just over 6 touchdowns, which is good for roughly top 7 among tight ends last year. Again, the bar for tight ends is so low that if you get a respectable line from them, they'll put up a decent season. Over his career, like I said, it's been pretty good, but last year his pace would have landed him at 73 catches, 870 yards, and closer to 7 touchdowns, which would have been tight end 9 on a fantasy points per game basis. So no matter which way you look at it, he's pretty much a top 10 tight end on a per game basis. He has virtually no competition at the position and saw 78% of the team's offensive snaps last season when he was healthy. So I think he's bound to be featured heavily again this year and could definitely turn in a top 5 point per game season for Henry, because again, I'm not necessarily banking on him starting all 16 games.
Yeah, it's crazy because he still fetches the same ADP as he has in the past. And he was a guy who was really hyped up in 2018 based on what he did his first 2 years. But like, and then he tore his ACL. He was out for the year before the year even started. Then he gets hurt in the middle of last year. But if you picked him up off of waivers, like, he ended up having some great games in there. So I see the upside, but I feel like he's getting a little bit of that injury prone tag to him, which sucks. And just the level of capital invested is tough for that as well. But transitioning that into a tight end that I love and that I'm going to try to make sexy, it's Jack Doyle. Well, Doyle rules. And speaking of which, we have an article on the Undroppables, this website I edited for, called Jack Doyle Rules, written by FF_Terminator. So you guys should check that out. And I took some things from that to share for this argument. I think the biggest thing before
you didn't outsource your Julian Edelman one, but you're outsourcing your Jack Doyle argument.
Well, I don't know if I outsourced it, but I did my research, right? So looking at that article, there's a couple good points that were brought up. First off, Philip Rivers, in my mind, is an upgrade from Jacoby Brissett. Jacoby Brissett is fringe starter, fringe backup, like one of the best backups in the league, but he's not Philip Rivers, even if Rivers is old. Little known fact with Rivers is he actually worked with Frank Reich in San Diego when they were both working for the Chargers. Frank Reich was the offensive coordinator there for a couple of years. And in one of those seasons, there were 141 targets that were distributed to tight ends in the Chargers offense. So, you know, when you look at the Colts offense, you've got Reich there. Other than T.Y. Hilton, I don't see much legitimate, like, high-volume target competition. Like, you've got some young guys in Paris Campbell and Michael Pittman, but I don't see them getting a ton of targets. And in 2017, the last time Jack Doyle played a full complement of games, like 15 games, with a starting caliber quarterback. He saw over 100 targets, 80 receptions for 690 yards and 4 touchdowns. So I'm not saying that that's like, you know, world beating, but when we talk about his ADP being, you know, tight end 18 in the rankings, tight end 21 in like ECR, you can draft him in the last round of your league or pick him up off the waivers during the season just to see him compete on a week-to-week basis for that top 10 or top 12 tight end spot at the end of the season, because you've just got this glut of tight ends. And I think his situation's really good for an even better price.
Without a doubt. I just, again, we're talking about upside a lot here. And Doyle is just a guy that I don't think I'll have on any of my teams as much as Rivers. To your point, I think is an upgrade over Jacoby Brissett. I don't think will lift him enough to be a top 12 running, tight end, even though, like I mentioned, the bar is pretty low.
Yeah, it's tough at tight end, but I think that's the biggest thing is it's a guy people just aren't talking about enough. There's a lot of other tight ends getting a lot of hype that could still finish at tight end 10, and you paid a pick that was 5 rounds earlier.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Well, that does it for our show today. We will be back with you next week. Of course, we are inching our way to the fantasy football season. We are deep in draft season. We got to run to catch some Hard Knocks here in a couple minutes. So for Andrew Mackins at Andrew Mackins, for Garner at Garnther, I am Sam Hoppin at Sam Hoppin. You can follow our podcast account at Pod After TD. And with that, the kick is good.